Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Yes, indeed. This is the Horn for the 13th day of September 2016. I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that out of the way right quick. No need for a reminder then. And, I invite one and all to participate. Well, at least one and all who can negotiate Java and you know, everything that attends that. Join us in the chat room where we have a merry multimedia madcap extravaganza in real time during the 3 hours of the live program every evening. Just run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, and pick yourself out a password and a screen name, jump in, and there you will be greeted by Anatole, Hoghead, Jugapunch, Laborman, Snork, Steve from Georgistan, and longtime and veteran indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave, because apparently the Man Cave is not unbearable this evening. Yes. Let's see. Multitasking. Why am I multitasking? Because at about 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I will be filling in for the somewhat under the weather Mike Malloy. And, right now I'm trying to get my gizmo to connect to Progressive Voices gizmo, and so that hopefully, and we are all connected. So hopefully now that that's done, we can kind of move on from there. Like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday. You might recall that Titanic Tuesday is so named from something that happened many, many years ago, something our buddy Jim reported to us back when, we're talking about eons ago now, when one of the world's most profound monotones, a right-winger named Steve, not a member of the fraternity of Steve, he'd take calls from his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers in the middle, you know, from time to time when he wasn't just reading them the newspaper on the air. And one morning, as Jim reported, one of the mouth-walking knuckle-breathers called in and asked why there were seashells in the rock formations of West Virginia, because after all, we ain't nowhere near the beach. To which Steve responded, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And thus was Titanic Tuesday a celebration of Titanic full steam ahead into the iceberg reasoning most often practiced by the right wing. Born. Yes. Of course, we are. We're still awaiting word on the on the whereabouts of the Titanic Martini strainer. Mm-hmm. Big table, that Titanic table. So we've got a lot to work with. We have, as long as there's a right white wing in this country, we will have a lot to work with. And I think we can probably knock down a couple of hours of what I hope is high-quality progressive broadcasting this evening, dealing with various and sundry, you know, freaks. Oh, Brother Deacon Asa, you remember, you remember. Oh, how I miss Monotone Steve. Remember, Bob, Steve had to carry that program despite the lack of any talent whatsoever. A tremendous feat, if you ask me. And it was. It was. Oh, Anatole, we worried about the Titanic doilies years ago. Yeah. And so, that having been mentioned by Anatole, I trust that the broadcast is reaching. Let me get this out of the way. Ace is getting the program. Anatole's getting the program. We'll cross our fingers. And further, let me simply mention that this is a listener-supported radio program. No ads. Nobody paying us to say nice things about them or to deliver you to their to an advertiser's tender mercies. We run entirely on listener contributions, and we don't ask for a lot of them. I noticed that West Virginia Petroleum Radio, actually they would be West Virginia Coal Radio. They get a lot of funding from law firms that do business with the coal industry. I noticed that they're having their funding drive this month. And I had to run out to the store and back down to the Rippy Mart. And lo and behold, they were trying to raise $750 this hour. And that was last hour, so I'm sure they got it. Yeah. Well, we're not trying to raise any $750 an hour. I don't have that kind of ego. But we do try to raise $200 in 3 hours every evening. And, you know, that works out to about $66.66 per hour. Ha? See? Yeah? Mm-hmm. So the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. And I'm sorry, Fab. I had another note from Fab, who loves the program and desperately wants to contribute, but can't seem to get the PayPal interface to work for credit card contributions. And being as how I don't contribute through the interface to the program, not a lot of help there. But I apologize. We would be thrilled to have your contribution. But at any rate, I don't know, maybe sometime down the road we'll figure out some way to do a direct interface with some credit card company. Okay? Yeah. Now, as far as anything else goes, no, we try to raise $200. One at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250. 32 at 6.25, or 64 at $3.13. Yes, and we are even. $200, that's all we need to raise this evening, which is nice. However, I will add that Larry's challenge remains on the table, and we are down to 294. 294 $1 contributions to go in order to qualify the horn for a $666 contribution that would make for, you know, a whole week's funding. So there's that. If you've never contributed to the program, run over to the PayPal interface, Don't do it by the U.S. mail because it'll cost you more than the PayPal will. We're looking for people who've never, ever, 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 ever contributed to the Horn to send a dollar. Just a dollar. A dollar that won't get you a cup of coffee. A dollar that won't buy you a candy bar. A dollar that won't buy you a half a gallon of gas. A dollar that won't buy you a half a gallon of milk. A dollar that won't buy you a hamburger. Just a dollar. If you've never contributed, this would be a great time to do it and a great way to feel good about doing it because your one becomes two, etc. So we got that. If you do want to use the U.S. Postal Service for larger contributions, Boss Man Wayne is thrilled to pieces to see those. And he goes to the mailbox and takes a hefty piece of angle iron with him in case he runs into the Klan. And his spider-proof gloves. If, however, you're going to send something through the mail, you can let me know, and that way he won't have to put his spider-proof gloves on. He can leave them in the truck and just take the angle iron with him. And the address there, the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Mm-hmm. Checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, please. Because, well, you know, cash. Stealable. So that's okay. That's all taken care of now. Everything's out of the way. Yes, everything is out of the way. A special note to our friends in Ukraine. There'll be a couple of bumper stickers on the way to you. Yeah, lovely note, and I really appreciated it. And, you know, we've got listeners in Kiev. We've got listeners in Belarus. It's a little boutique program, and we're not easy to find, and we're not splashed all over the internet advertising, but people are very, very happy when they get here. For some reason or another, this program strikes a chord with people. Maybe it's because we're so out of the ordinary. At least I hope that's why. Our friend in Ukraine noted that he is polishing up his English skills by listening to this program. And it worried me a little bit. Because let me just say that salting one's regular routine conversations with the word that begins with F and ends with uck is still generally not acceptable in, you know, day-to-day business type speech. Just a word to the wise is sufficient. But I was looking at that and it got my mind going. We'll get to the Titanic intellects in a minute. I know you're just chomping at the bit to talk about deplorables. But my mind, and welcome to it. So I wake up this morning. I look at that note, because John Fox had forwarded it on to me. And so I look up. I mean, this is how my mind works. And I know a lot of you have experienced this too, and it's kind of fun, but I thought it'd be kind of interesting to chart it out. So I fire up Google Earth. I wander over to Kiev and start looking around and start looking at the pictures. And then I notice that there's a picture that shows one of these great, big, humongous Soviet-era gigantic statues. In this case, it's Mother Ukraine. And she's holding a shield and a sword, and she's made of stainless steel. I guess aluminum was too hard to come by. But she's made of stainless steel. She's 63 meters tall. And she's on a little ridgeline overlooking what I believe to be the Dnieper, D-N-I-E-P-E-R, river. And then I found a trivia fact that said that they had to lop off the end of the of of the statue's sword because it could not be because the sword made it taller than the local Russian Orthodox Church, or maybe Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Don't know. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. So I wandered over there, and I started reading about that pile of bricks. And it was apparently built in the 11th century and designed by architects from Constantinople. And you know me, I get all misty-eyed about Constantinople. And it was staffed by a missionary from Mount Athos in Greece, so I had to go off and read about Mount Athos in Greece, and I found out that it's an entire missionary community on a little tiny Greek peninsula, and that women, man, if you ever wanted to look at how twisted religion is, women are not, there's all kinds of monasteries there, monks and hermits and, you know, guys in robes off in the backs of caves, you know, but women are forbidden to set foot on the peninsula because it is consecrated to the Blessed Virgin Mary. No, really. Not kidding. It's dedicated to a woman, and therefore other women can't set foot on it. Religion. So from there, I found out about this weird cult that was obsessed with the name of God that started out in Russia and became a minor kerfuffle in the church, at which point I simply closed, I closed my computer and said, my brain has gone too far. But that's just, you know, I learned a whole bunch this morning. And I hope I put it on brain cells that don't, like, you know, run screaming off a cliff or something. But, you know, my mind and welcome to it. And enjoy the Horn broadcast by all means. And tell your friends there in Kiev and throughout Ukraine. So, that. All right, Titanic Tuesday. Where to begin? Well, here's a question. Hopefully it's a fairly simple question. If you're a member of the Klan, are you deplorable? Yeah, I guess in the world of deplorables, one man's nightshirt is another man's pajamas. Or woman's. But the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party, in a fashion somewhat reminiscent of St. Peter, was offered the opportunity to declare David Duke to be deplorable. But he wouldn't. And David Duke, former, if not present, Grand Dragon of the KKK, well, he appreciated it. Oh, Mount Athos. Jim tells me Rasputin studied there. Suddenly things make a whole lot of sense. He is a former KKK Grand Wizard, not Rasputin, David Duke. And the Republican Party, frankly, wants that Klan vote. There's no getting around it. They want the Klan vote. So, time after time after time, over the past couple of days, people have asked Vice Presidential nominee for the GOP, Mike Pence, to denounce David Duke as, and this is the mot du jour, my French, il n'est pas très bon,
le français.
But oh, because deplorable, because Hillary created a thing with a reference to a certain portion of Republican voters whom she says that she just sort of intellectually or spiritually or mentally casts into a basket of deplorables. Which, as a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, I must say I've never heard of a basket of deplorables. Now, a few weeks ago, we went into the whole thing about taxonomic names, murder of crows, that sort of thing. But a basket of deplorables? Sorry, never. I mean, it's just clunky. Inartful. It almost makes you think that maybe back when she was a little girl growing up in Illinois, that Hillary Rodham never learned the art of the insult. She, I guess, was sheltered enough that she never played the "Yo mama so ugly" game, or "You so ugly." "You're so ugly, your mama has to put a pork chop around your neck to get the dog to play with you." That sort of thing. And that's how you wind up with basket of deplorables. Or maybe Hillary didn't come up with a basket of deplorables. Because I'm sitting here looking at a story. No, I wish I was kidding. I'm not kidding. I'm sitting here looking at a story. Is Hillary already dead? Oh, God. Did somebody take a picture of her and she's out of step with, like, George and Joe Biden and, Bill and Joe Biden and Barack Obama or something? I don't know. Conspiracy theorists claim Hillary Clinton is dead and she has a body double. Exposed. Hillary Clinton at 9/11 memorial with doctor and camera woman fake. Remember, this is Titanic Tuesday, so that's why I'm sharing this with you. Not out of any gross sense of trying to look at the mentally deficient or make fun of the mentally deficient over on the right wing. Hillary Clinton believes sympathy will get more votes for her. Hillary Clinton will not be showing up in California this week as planned. Hillary Clinton health problems. Clinton doctor talks. Hillary Clinton has pneumonia and is on antibiotics. Hillary Clinton collapsing at 9/11 event. Hillary Clinton collapses, faints at 9/11 memorial, September 11th, New York. Hillary Clinton sick bad health. But the one at the top. Conspiracy theorists claim Hillary Clinton is dead and she has a body double. I buried Paul. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. That is going to be absolutely meaningless to people not of a certain age. But it's Tuesday. So therefore, and there's more of them. Lots of more ants. Lots and lots of more ants. Yeah, exactly, Arthur. Your mama's so short you can see her feet in her driver's license. There we go. Hillary never played that. That's how you wind up with basket of deplorables. Which is, and the question is, because she said roughly, she said broadly generalizing, which should be a clue, if we could understand, if right wingers could understand fancy highfalutin two syllable and three syllable words like broadly and general. Okay, wait a minute, generalize. It's ciphering, okay? Generalizing. A two-syllable word and a five-syllable word, but damn, a five-syllable word, please. That probably drove little white wingers and birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, deathers, baggers, birchers, and healthers into a paroxysmic frenzy that had them standing around, trying to raise one leg up, chew on their toenail like that goofy interpretive dancer at the musical performance at the end of the Apple keynote, for God's sakes. That dancer had to be a Republican. Ain't nobody can chew toenails like a Republican. But she said she was broadly generalizing that, you know, half of Trump's supporters can be put into a basket of deplorables. And by roughly generalizing, the first thing that came to my mind was, 47% maybe of them? Yeah? And some of whom are, well, David Duke, who is very thankful to Mike Pence for not considering a grand wizard of the goddamn KKK to be, you know, deplorable. But it raises another question, doesn't it? If a grand wizard of the KKK is not deplorable, then at that point in time, I think we have to say that the deplorable bar has been countersunk into the ground. What then is deplorable? Are the Bundy Bunch, are they deplorable? How about the folks over at Stormfront? Are they deplorable? Is the American Nazi Party deplorable? Oh, well played, Stockton Larry in the chat room. The bar has been lowered. Very nice. Very nice. It works a little better visually than it does orally, but still, lowered. L-A-U-R-E-D. As in Matt. And I ask about, you know, Stormfront and the Klan and the American Nazi Party and the Bundys and all of those Jagoffs, which is now a word in the Oxford English Dictionary. Because all of those people support Trump. And I guess the larger inquiry becomes one of whether or not one's actions are and one's associations are in any wise a reflection on one's overall character. Steve from Georgistan helpfully provides the simple definition of deplorable: very bad in a way that causes shock, fear, or disgust. Are you shocked? Are you fearful? Are you disgusted by David Duke? And notice it's or, it's not and, so it doesn't have to be all three. One will do. I'm disgusted by David Duke. David Duke is a disgusting human being because he's a Klansman. There aren't any, I don't know, maybe we need to have a meeting or a conversation geared toward reaching consensus on this point. Does being a Klansman make you disgusting? I mean, after all, maybe your average grand wizard bowls in a league or gives money to the Starvation Army, or maybe the Clavern has a giving plan for the United Way. Does that mitigate deploriciousness? Because to my mind, it doesn't. Now, if you step away from the Klan and you say, wow, that was really nasty being in the Klan. I regret being in the Klan. I'm sorry I was in the Klan. I denounce the Klan. Then the deplorability factor begins to diminish, I suppose. But I guess we are locked in a national debate about what constitutes deplorable. And that answer, and I'm not gonna sit here and tell you what's deplorable and what's not. Quit telling people how to vote. Kind of had to do that. But from where I stand, yeah, once you're a member of the Klan, the American Nazi Party, if you walk around giving away free copies of Atlas Shrugged to impressionable teenagers, those things are, I mean, deplorable, yes. And it's going to color my overall vision, my overall consideration of what kind of person you are. But we're talking about my biases, my prejudices, not yours. And so that's the inquiry. And I don't necessarily know where the cutoff is. I won't tell you where the cutoff is for you. This is not right-wing radio. People tune into right-wing radio to be told how to think. And this program has never, ever done that, to the best of my knowledge and the best of my ability. But deplorable? Deplorable. That's four syllables. Most of the Republicans who are outraged by it are outraged by a word they don't even understand. But my biases are such that, and I want to make this clear, my biases are such that if you vote for Donald Trump, there is some portion of me that thinks that there is something wrong with you. And of course, when the devil made that remark, she was making it about people who support Trump, and she said, broadly generalizing, half of them fit into the basket of deplorables. And the other half are so convinced, and this is the result of a generational effort by the Republican Party, are so convinced that government doesn't give a good old-fashioned damn about them, that they'll vote for anybody in the simple hope that they'll get some kind of relief. And maybe that's true. But it doesn't change the fact that I think if you vote for Donald Trump, there's probably something wrong with you. Because at this point in time, there is just too damned much evidence, regardless of what you think of the devil, there's too much evidence of how absolutely dangerous the zombie Cheeto is, to be able to vote for him with anything resembling a clear conscience. Point in fact, case in point. This outfit called Science Debate, they're a nonprofit group. They are in favor of, you know, science and knowing science, and they want political candidates to be scientifically literate. Well, they sent out a questionnaire to all the major presidential candidates, you know, both of them. They also sent out questionnaires to Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. Stop telling people how to vote! Well, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini and the devil and Jill Stein sent their questionnaires back. Don't know where Jill Stein sent it back from. Columbus, Cincinnati, a hall coat closet that she thought was the exit to the house. No telling. Gary Johnson apparently did not send his back because he was still struggling trying to figure out, what's Aleppo, Alex? The survey concerned what Science Debate termed the 20 most pressing scientific issues facing humanity today. When Think Progress interviewed Andrew Rosenberg, who is director of the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists, and released the candidates' responses, Andrew Rosenberg responded, "Science is central to policies that protect public health, safety, and the environment, from climate change to diet-related diseases. Reporters, as well as voters, should use these statements on science to push the candidates for more details on how they intend on addressing these many societal challenges." Well, I just happen to have here, courtesy of Think Progress, some of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's answers. "My administration will work with Congress to establish priorities for our government and how we will allocate our limited fiscal resources. This approach will assure that the people's voices will be heard on this topic and others." So we're going to determine science by popular consensus. That's my takeaway. Here's the fun part. Was that the preamble to his other answers? No. That was Trump's answer about ocean health. The viability, the ongoing viability of the oceans that make up 3/4, 2/3 of the planet's surface.
Yeah, we're going to make sure people's voices are heard on this topic and others. It's beautiful. Huge. The oceans are huge. That's why I have a yacht and a mansion and a plane.
Yeah, see, Ron, in the still not refrozen north, and probably won't be frozen for a while yet because climate change, notes, "Greetings from the land of sanity." Yeah, they've got a, up there in the Canadian Constitution, they've got a clause about sanity. Ah, no, they don't. You can't fool me. There ain't no sanity clause. But Ron notes, science by consensus. What could go wrong? So, you know, you go down to Talabama and you check in there with Cletus, who just got done trimming his mullet. And Cletus says he don't think there's anything wrong with oceans. Oceans are just fine. I mean, a whole lot of ocean, if we want to dump a little oil in it, it ain't no big deal. So we're going to make sure Cletus's voice gets heard. Then there's, this may take a little bit, but please bear with me. You might not hear this anywhere else. There's the Psychotic Circus Peanuts answer on biodiversity. And according to the survey, biological diversity provides food, fiber, medicines, clean water, and many other products and services on which we depend every day. Scientists are finding that the variety and variability of life is diminishing at an alarming rate as a result of human activity. What steps will you take to protect biological diversity? And I think back to the fact that some of the folks who say there's no way on heaven or earth that they could ever vote for the devil do so because they say she's not serious enough about climate change. Okay. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, maybe when the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini talks about hearing people's voices on ocean health, he's referring to Exxon's voice and not Cletus's. Well, that's, based on what we understand the status of reality to be, that's entirely possible. After all,
corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
Yes, Bishop. What steps will you take to protect biological diversity? Well, there's Hillary's answer. And, of course, it's worth remembering that Appalachia is one of the most biodiverse regions on Earth. And she is sort of, I mean, it's a reality. It has to be dealt with. She has sat idly by while Central Appalachia was blown into various and sundry moonscapes. No getting around that. But just the same, here's the biodiversity answer from Donald J. Trump millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane.
For too long, presidents in the executive branch of our federal government have continued to expand their reach and impact. Today we... What the hell does that even mean?
Presidents and the executive branch of our federal government have continued to expand their reach and impact. So as president, the man who said, I alone can solve this, is going to check his own power so that he alone can't solve that.
Okay. Today we have agencies filled with unelected officials who have been writing rules and regulations that cater to special interests and undermine the foundational notion of our government that should be responsive to the people. Our elected representatives have done little to uphold their oaths of office and have abrogated their responsibilities.
Now remember, this is a question about biodiversity.
When these circumstances occur, there's an imbalance that rewards special interests and punishes the people who should benefit the most from the protection of species and habitat in the United States. In a Trump administration, there will be shared governance of our public lands.
Ah, what does that mean? shared governance of our public lands. Well, that refers to the platform plank in the GOP platform. And, of course, platforms mean nothing. I mean, everybody knows that. I mean, platforms can just be ignored because everybody just ignores them, except for the GOP, who has a platform plank calling for basically the national parks and all federal lands to be turned over to the states so we can drill, baby, drill, slash and burn, timber, baby, timber, mine, baby, mine, mountaintop remove, baby, mountaintop remove, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So those platform planks matter. But over on the Democratic side, they don't. Quit telling people how to vote!
In a Trump administration, there will be a beautiful shared governance, okay, I added the beautiful, of our public lands, and we will empower state and local governments to protect our wildlife and fisheries if they feel like it. Okay, I added the if they feel like it part. Laws that tilt the scales towards special interests must be modified to balance the needs of society with the preservation of our valuable living resources. My administration will strike that balance by bringing all stakeholders to the table to determine the best approach for seeking and settling and setting that balance.
In other words, if you want to frack it, you want to blast it, you want to clear cut it, you're gonna. Because, see, polar bears, wolves, I mean, snail darters, spotted owls, the last gray wolf, they're the special interests that he's complaining about. It's not those special interests that do things like poison people, poison water, poison the air. Ran into an interesting statistic the other night. Kind of fascinating. Since 1986, U.S. pipelines have caused 500 plus deaths, thousands of injuries, as well as $6.8 billion, with a B, dollars in money damages. But we're gonna balance biodiversity with the people who do all that. And the rest, you know, the rest of the survey results are equally bizarre, to say the least. Remember how Hillary's not worth voting for because she's not going to do enough about climate change? Yeah. Well, Trump's climate change answer is a real Lulu. You haven't put away the hockey pucks, have you? I hope you haven't. Here's T. Rump's answer to the science debate survey about climate change.
There's still much that needs to be investigated in the field of climate change.
and climate change has dick fingers around it.
Climate change.
Because it's not a real thing. Whoever answered this for him had to put scare quotes around it so that everybody would understand that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini doesn't even think it's a thing.
Perhaps the best use of our limited financial resources...
This guy must think we're broke. Of course we're not. We get to print our own money.
Perhaps the best use of our limited financial resources should be in dealing with making sure that every person in the world has clean water. Perhaps we should focus...
Now, both of these sentences begin with perhaps, because he's not sure. He's not sure everybody in the world should have clean water.
Perhaps we should focus on eliminating lingering diseases around the world like malaria.
Perhaps. Because he's not sure.
Perhaps we should focus on efforts to increase food production to keep pace with an ever-growing world population.
Perhaps. Because he's really not sure.
Perhaps we should be focused on developing energy sources and power production that alleviates the need for dependence on fossil fuels.
Because he's not sure, again.
We must decide on how best to proceed so that we can make lives better, safer, and more prosperous.
Donald, malaria is made worse by climate change. Access to clean water is diminished by climate change. Food production for that ever-growing population that you're not sure we should feed is negatively impacted by climate change. Dependence on fossil fuels is why we have climate change.
And so we must decide on how best to proceed.
That's a decision, you know, he'll make later. As soon as he figures out whether or not climate change should have scare quotes around it. Damn nation. Remember way, way back in the beginning of the primary season and the pageants when Bernie took a rasher of shit from the Hilarians for suggesting that the greatest national security threat that the United States faces is climate change?
Crazy old man. This is not
Denmark. Well, it's still a fact. And here, if you were ever wondering, here's proof positive that Donald J. Trump, millionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht,
and a jet,
ain't much of a businessman. Because if Donald J. Trump, millionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht and a jet, and for all we know, keeps melanoma in a pit, if he had any business acumen, then he could get people to take his calls from, like, great big humongous insurance multinationals. And he could say to them, because, you know, he doesn't trust scientists.
Nerds.
One of my first executive orders will be to give every scientist in America a swirly and a series of really vicious noogies. huge, beautiful noogies.
If they would take his call, though, the CEO of any major insurance company could say to him, listen, dipshit, I mean, Donald, we have more money than you can ever dream of. And the vast majority of it is at risk because we're a gambling house. So we're constantly spinning the roulette wheel. And, dumbass, I mean, Donald, we know that climate change is real. Because we pay the price for it. And we've had to add more phalanges of lawyers to fight in court to keep from having to pay the price for it when we take in the premiums and take in the premiums and then the disaster strikes and we say, you know, because we're an insurance company, we say we don't pay. But Dickweed, I mean, Donald, climate change is real. And there's just no getting around it. And any policy that you promulgate that puts scare quotes around climate change says that it's not that you're just willing to fuck ordinary Americans and the rest of the world who are negatively impacted by climate change, but that you're willing to fuck us. And Donald, we got, as I mentioned, enough money to buy you for what you're worth and sell you for what you think you're worth. And we don't take kindly to you putting your thumb on the roulette wheel that we're spinning. Kay? Dumbledoofus? I mean, Donald? But he doesn't want to hear from them. And one wonders even if if Trump has enough brains to understand that he is screwing them. Of course, a few days ago, he declared that our military leadership, the Pentagon, the generals, are all pretty much inept and incompetent. And there's no debate inside the Pentagon as to whether climate change is real. Because they have real live scientists. And the scientists don't lie to the generals. No matter what Senator Snowball from Oklahoma says, there's no conspiracy at the Pentagon to convince them to screw the American military because climate change. You know, one of those first rules, one of those early rules in Sun Tzu's The Art of War is don't fight a war in which you can gain nothing, one. And another one is, don't fight on the ground of someone else's choosing, which corollary-wise has the idea that you choose the ground upon which you fight. Well, if climate change is real, and it is, then for the Pentagon not to be aware of it and not to take it into account is to allow its ground to be chosen for it, which is a surefire way to, you know, get your ass beat. So there's that. Deplorables. from top to bottom.
Really?
And we have a rich abundance of them. And we'll go into more of them in the second hour of the program. Now, remember, there's only 2 hours to the program this evening. I'm knocking off at 8 because I will be filling in for Mike Malloy at 9. At this point in time, we have $200 to raise. I'm sorry, $195. Thank you, Tieran. Thank you very kindly. $195 to go, and a short time in which to get there. If you would like to participate in the conversation, you are most welcome so to do. You know the numbers I trust, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line named for Bill Mr. Stress Miller. And it works for some and not for others, and there's no understanding why. But that's available. 304-574-8178 is the other line. That's available to you. As is Skype. Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet. Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. And you're welcome to join in and add your thoughts. We got more Titanic intellect, Titanic wisdom headed your way. Oh, yes, 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 we do. And, of course, this being Tuesday, we also have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Something I always look forward to. So, light up the phones. Respond to Larry's $1 at a time, $666 challenge, 2-for-1 for your $333. $294 to go. Yeah. And let's see what the next hour brings. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, September 13, 2016.
We knew all along that the deck was stacked against us, but we had to do something.
The Obama administration steps in to support the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and halt the Dakota Access Pipeline.
The carbon titans, the carbon cronies, are now mobilizing to protect their market share and to protect their profits.
Why the oil industry is pushing for more pipelines. Judge rules against plan to open 1 million acres of public lands to fracking in California. Alabama has an unfinished nuclear plant for sale, real cheap. Plus, here we go again. August 2016 breaks the record, ties for hottest month ever recorded in human history.
All of that unfinished business and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We could make energy burning prime rib if we wanted to. But why would we choose the most expensive product that there is?
Because it's delicious. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, a lot of drama over the past week or two up in North Dakota. Last Friday, I think we had the most drama yet.
Yes, it was an extraordinary twist in the Standing Rock Sioux tribe's lawsuit to halt construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline that threatens their sacred sites and water supplies. Within minutes after a federal judge denied the tribe's request for an injunction, the Obama administration Justice Department issued a joint statement with the Interior Department and the Army temporarily halting construction of the pipeline on federal lands pending a new review and asking the company to voluntarily halt construction within 20 miles of the disputed area, and calling for an examination of the permitting process on tribal lands. On MSNBC, Jane Cleave of Bold, Nebraska, went even further, noting that the oil industry is also abusing eminent domain for private profit.
There's national reform that's needed on eminent domain for private gain. We have big oil corporations that essentially are ignoring not only the sovereign rights of our native brothers and sisters, but are ignoring the property rights of farmers and ranchers. And so we have pipelines going in that aren't even for American energy independence anymore. They're essentially all for the export.
Funny thing, you know, about that eminent domain. Republicans are really, really angry about it. They hate it, unless it has to do with oil pipelines. Then they seem to be fine with it.
And in a message of support to the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., president of Waterkeeper Alliance, said a key reason for these efforts to accelerate huge fossil fuel projects like the Dakota Access Pipeline is an attempt by the oil industry to lock in fossil fuel use for decades to come at the expense of renewable energy infrastructure.
The carbon industry is scrambling as fast as it can to put more and more infrastructure on the books. And that's why over the past 10 years in this country, there's been 16,000 miles of gas and oil pipelines constructed and only 600 miles of transmission lines. Why? Because transmission is the media of renewable energy.
Kennedy points out that right now the cost of renewables like wind and solar is almost at exact parity with oil and coal. And so that's what they have to do. They got to lock in these pipelines so they can then make the argument for years and years. Hey, let the oil flow. We have to pay off our investment. It's kind of obscene.
Exactly. Meanwhile, in California, a federal judge ruled against the Federal Bureau of Land Management on a plan to open up more than 1 million acres of public lands in Central California to more drilling and fracking.
Speaking of obscene.
In a lawsuit brought by EarthJustice.org, the judge ruled that the Bureau of Land Management failed to analyze the risks of fracking and other dangerous oil and gas extraction techniques, citing potential threats to endangered wildlife and water supplies amid an historic drought. NASA has announced that August 2016 was not only the hottest August of all Augusts ever recorded since record-keeping began in the 1800s, but also ties last month, July 2016, for the absolute warmest month ever measured of any month in human history.
Man.
Meteorologist Eric Holdhouse notes that this new tie for the warmest absolute monthly global temperature record is extra disturbing because there is no more El Nino weather pattern to blame for goosing global temperatures.
Wow. And all they could talk about in the presidential campaign is baskets of deplorables. Really?
Costa Rica has announced it's been operating on 100% renewable electricity now for 2 straight months. That's 80 days and counting without burning any fossil fuels to generate electricity, putting it on track to match or beat its record last year of 150 total days running just on clean renewable energy.
Yeah, but have they tried burning prime rib?
Finally, in Alabama, you can now buy an unfinished nuclear power plant with 2 reactors, waterfront acreage, and plenty of parking for a bargain basement price of just $37 million. The Tennessee Valley Authority is trying to unload the unfinished plant after spending more than 40 years and $5 billion on it.
Decades and decades of scammery. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ten minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Let's do remember there's only about 45 minutes of meaningful conversation left in the program, because I will be knocking off early to fill in for Malloy at 9 p.m. As he is somewhat under the weather. And that means it would be nice if we could get going on fundraising for the evening. We started the week great. We knocked down our fundraising goal last night. Great. We're minus $195 right now as we speak. Let's run over to the Skype line where I suspect Tracy awaits. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm muddling along. How about you?
Well, you know, I have a confession to make.
Yes.
It's a bad one. You know how we always talk about Ayn Rand and all that? And I just realized, okay, I have to admit this, that The Fountainhead, maybe because it was Gary Cooper, was one of my favorite movies. Now, granted, I didn't know what I was watching. I just was watching, you know, Gary Cooper and Patricia Neal. So now, because I haven't seen it in years, and maybe that's a good thing, but now I'm going to have to rethink my whole thing about that movie, knowing now, you know, it's one of those things, you know, a lot more than 2020 hindsight and all that stuff.
And I mean, don't beat yourself up too much. I mean, Gary Cooper was Gary Cooper, and he turned in tremendous performances even when he was working with Dreck for a script.
Right.
And if you want to look up some background on it, you'll find out that Ayn Rand was absolutely unbearable on the set. I mean, she even tried to overrule the director and overrule Gary Cooper on how he delivered his lines. I mean, can you imagine even trying that?
No.
Right.
No, I can't even, like I said, and I'm going, so that's my confession. And so the next thing is, good news, let's do a $25 challenge.
Oh, thank you.
To try to knock some of that. That pain away, seeing that we only have about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. We're not just quite probably 40 minutes left in the program. So now I just, you know, the whole deplorable thing, and like you said, what ranks as deplorable?
Well, first of all, maybe, I don't know, would she have fared any better if she would have said half of Trump supporters are jerks?
I think, you know what, I think what she should have said or could have said is like, you know what, anybody that supports Donald Trump, but this is the fact that, what do you stand for? This is a person who tried to say that he didn't know who David Dukes was. This is a person who said, you know, he has selective memory at best. And that's, you know, what kind of person did it say if you have selective memory? I don't want somebody to have selective memory running as my president, you know? And people call him on his stuff, he double downs on it. It's not like, you know, okay, you and I are human beings. And, you know, if somebody, you know, we don't intentionally say things that'll hurt people. Well, I have. But, I mean, you know what I mean. But if somebody calls us out on something, we're going to apologize. Especially if we thought, if we said something that was offensive or what have you. I mean, I cannot tell you how many people are pissed off at me. Well, this happens all the time. When people get pissed off at you and you have no idea what you did. And you go to that person, what did I do? Whatever I did, I apologize. You know, what did you think I said or what did you think I do? And then when you ask that person, I have no idea. I love it when they say, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, you don't talk to me anymore. We're not friends anymore. We used to hang out. What did I do? And 9 times out of 10, they don't even know what you're talking about. And it's like, but at least you have the common courtesy and the common decency as a human being, because you care. That's what it is. You care what other people think, especially people that feel you have harmed or aggrieved them. Donald Trump, he can give a flying fuck. Is that a fair statement?
Couldn't. Doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't.
I kind of want to go back. I want to go back, Tracy.
We're going into way back machine.
No. I just want to play a little. I want to play a little bit with the art of knowing words here for a minute. You know.
Oh, here we go.
There are those people out there, and from time to time, I've been one, so I recognize it. There are people out there that if you ask them what time it is, they'll tell you how to build a watch. And
I'm not one of those people.
No, Hillary, but Hillary is.
Right.
She talks in policy speak. She communicates in wonkese.
Yeah.
And if you're gonna play the your mama's so ugly game, you can't do it in wonkies.
No, see, it's like your mom's so short, she plays handball and she gets curved.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Yes. But I guess she was just raised too nice for that or something, or too Methodist. I don't know.
You said it. No. You hit it on the head. The nail on the head. Sheltered. It's like the woman at my church who... I'm not used to the wrath of a black woman. I said, bitch, it's not wrath. It's just me talking. And she even said, she's like, I was sheltered. So when you live your life, you know, where you don't have to really work. And again, I don't think that just because people are white that they have no issues. They do. They have. Everybody has their own set of problems and issues. But your issues don't, you know, your issues and my issues don't outweigh your issues or anything like that. But your issues don't come from my issues being oppressed. Did I say that right?
Yeah, I think you did. And okay. So, I mean, if you're going to go after the Trump supporters, you got to go after them so they know they've been gone after.
Right.
They had to, the people in the basket of deplorables had to have basket and deplorables explained to them. If you're insulted and you don't know you're insulted, what was the point of the insult?
Right.
And make no mistake, it was intended as an insult.
You know that. I know that.
And I want to be clear, I'm glad of it. This is a fight that has to be taken to them. Because, Tracy, the other part of this, and it's scary as hell, at least to me, is the speech that went down at the Values Voters Summit over the weekend.
I remember I watched most of it on Friday. I was listening to it.
Okay. Okay. So did you catch Matt Bevin, the governor of Kentucky's speech?
No. I got, like I said, I took one for the team on Friday. I took one for the team on Friday, so I got you know, what's his name, paying homage to Phyllis, and I can't even say her last name, Schlafly,
yeah.
Yeah.
Go to the Schlafly cutoff and get out of your car and cut off your Schlafly, yes.
Right. She was such, you know, she's an American, whatever, treasure, and that, you know, she endorsed me before she passed away, and I'm going to be meeting with their family, and
So Friday night at the Values Voters Summit, they gave the D. James Kennedy Center for Christian Statesmanship Award to Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin for his heroic stand in defense of Sister Clerk Kim Davis. Now, you have to know who D. James Kennedy was. He was a nasty, homophobic, vile Christian bigot who ran this Presbyterian herpetological sanctuary down in Florida, the Coral Snake Ministries.
Wait, did she say herpetological?
Yes.
Okay, I just...
This is progressive radio. I get to use Big Art of Knowing Words.
No, I know that, but see, that's what I love, because I'm like, oh my God, because of course that's a word, but it's like... You just called it because the people have herpes.
No. Snake.
Wait,
it's
what?
No, Snake Farm.
Oh, Snake Farm. Okay, I like to say, wait, okay, my Lord. I'm like, wait, what?
No.
Herpes, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so D. James Kennedy was this vile, homophobic bigot, and they give out an award in his name every year at the Values Voter Summit, and this year they gave it to Kentucky Stand Governor Matt Bevin for standing up in defense of Christian values for Sister Clerk Kim Davis.
Where was Kim Davis there over the weekend?
Oh, hell, I don't know. I'm sure she was.
I mean, but they didn't have the spotlight on her or anything like that.
No, they had the spotlight. They had the spotlight on Matt Bevin, and I'm about to run his audio for you.
No! Okay.
Well, no, I'm not. Because I'd have to fish around inside it, because that's the whole damn thing. I'm not gonna do that. So, he stood up and told the audience there. You remember me talking? You've been with us for a lot of years now.
Right.
And you've heard me from time to time use the phrase "Cold Civil War." That one's mine. That's nobody else's. I've said for years that the United States is locked in a cold civil war. It's a Cold War that's a civil war. And it's primarily being fought, agitated by the old Confederacy.
Oh, will they die already?
Well, no, they won't. But at one point in time, he started pondering what it would mean if Hillary Clinton, I'm sorry, the devil was to become president. And could America survive? No, I mean, this is the rhetoric they're using, Tracy. Could America survive a Hillary Clinton presidency?
It could survive a Hillary Clinton presidency a lot faster, more than it could survive a Trump presidency.
Well, there's that for starters. Right. But that's not how they think over there among the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, and healthers.
And now helpers.
Yeah, healthers. They think that, you know, she's got horns and a tail and cloven hooves and she's got a 666 tattoo on her left ass cheek. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, there's a plurality. There's a plurality of Republicans who think she may be the Antichrist.
So Matt Bevin.
Gets up to give his acceptance speech for his D. James Kennedy Bigotry Award.
Bigotry Award. God, I love you.
Of which he is, of which he is desperately proud. And he said,
and he says,
we don't have multiple options. We're going one way or we're going the other way, politically, spiritually, morally, economically, from a liberty standpoint. Sit, liberty, sit. We're going one way or we're going the other way. This passes for brilliant rhetoric in the right wing. We're going one way or we're going the other way. And then he went on to talk about a professor that he had in college who mocked Christianity the way they always do. They try to silence us. They try to get us to shut our mouths. They try to embarrass us. Don't be embarrassed. We were not redeemed to have a spirit of timidity. Be bold. There's enough Neville Chamberlains in the world. Be a Winston Churchill. There are quite enough sheep already. Be a shepherd.
Be a shepherd.
And then we get to this. Remember we were talking about the Cold Civil War?
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to this. Somebody asked me yesterday, I did an interview, and they said, and of course this is a lie. Somebody asked me yesterday, I did an interview, and they said, do you think it's possible if Hillary Clinton were to win the election, do you think it's possible that we'll be able to survive? That we would ever be able to recover as a nation? And while there are people who have stood on this stage and said we would not, I would beg to differ. But I will tell you this. I do think it would be possible. But at what price? At what price? The roots of the tree of liberty. Sit, liberty, sit.
Liberty.
Are watered by what? The blood of who? The tyrants, to be sure. But who else?
No, don't. No,
the patriots. No. Whose blood will be shed? It may be that of those in this room. It might be that of our children and grandchildren. I have 9 children. It breaks my heart to think that it might be their blood that is needed to redeem something, to reclaim something that we, through our apathy and our indifference, have given away. That some bitch wants a hot civil war.
Yeah. He wants the militia. He wants all those fools. They're living in compounds and, you know, pick a crazy ass state. And even in California, I'm not going to leave us out. He wants a full out war. He wants another civil war. Bloodshed.
But bear in mind, he wants his grandchildren to fight it.
Right. Not him. Not him. No. Not him. His grandbaby.
And you know what? I would like to, really, I hope someday we get that time machine and we can just go back in time and maybe wander in there to Monticello and look at old Marse Tom and say, Marse Tom, that letter you're writing right now, it's got the line about the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure. Because that's what he wrote. Don't put that in there, Tom.
No, because
a couple of hundred years from now, there's going to be idiots. who use that as an argument for why we ought to start a civil war.
Oh, God.
But it'll probably be lost on him, and he'll write it anyway because he'll look and he'll say, who's free?
No.
Right. No. See, it's that history, that ugly history, you know, with the facts. And yesterday, you know, the 49ers played the Rams, and I didn't see the game. I was at a restaurant, this really good pizza restaurant, and I had a really good pizza tip myself and a PBR. And so I was there in time. I was just watching the national anthem. Now I'm in Lakewood, which is a pretty, you know, very white part of, you know, the part of the city, in the south part of South LA County. And of course, there were some of the brothers that were, you know, people taking the knee and stuff like that. Well, now, how many times have you been to a restaurant or any place in public and you're not at a stadium when the national anthem plays? Does anybody stand up in the restaurant?
Oh, hell no.
Okay. So, last night, I'm sitting in there eating my pizza, and all of a sudden, all the white people were standing up. And I just sat there.
You are shitting me.
I kid you fucking not.
They were standing up in a pizza joint. Did they place their hands over their pizza? Did they put down their pizza? Did they take their hats off? Did they have their hats on?
They did not take their hats off. They did not put their hands over their hearts. So I was just standing there, and I was just like, and I didn't feel threatened or anything like that. But I'm like, I cannot tell you how many times I've been at an eating establishment or any place where the game was on, except for like if you're at a Best Buy or somewhere where you have to stand up because there's nowhere to sit. But I've never seen that happen. And I'm like, wow, that just really shocked and amazed me. That, you know, it's like, I don't know. Because here's the question that I'm wondering. Did they stand up because, you know, this is what they always do? Or did they stand up because they saw the black woman sitting in there and I was eating my pizza and not getting...
Ooh, I didn't even think of it in those terms. I thought maybe they had just, now that they got football back in L.A., you know, they got to stand for the national anthem.
That's it. There's that, even though they got... I heard it was the Rams showed their asses last night.
There wasn't a lot of there. Most exciting part of the game was the guy, the drunk guy who ran down the field. But just to get us back to Matt Bevin for a minute, Tracy.
Oh God, do we have to?
Yeah, we do, because we got to come to an understanding of this. See, this damn fool is still locked down 150-160 years ago. And he's got some crazy-ass notion banging around in his head that the boys in Butternut are going to march again. And he's got this vision of civil war the way it was practiced in the United States. You know, one nice little army lined up in rags and Butternut on one side, and another army lined up in blue on the other. And they start... and they start just shooting at each other, and it's horrible and it's bloody, and 300,000 Americans were killed and 300,000 traitors, which is bloody enough. But it looked like, well, it didn't look like civil wars look like, and that's my larger point here, Tracy.
The civil war he wants
and the civil war he's going to get are not necessarily the same animal. But the civil war he's getting now is a civil war that involves twisted young Nazis walking into churches and blowing away 9 black people.
Yes.
It is terrorism, but it is also a manifestation of a civil war. And by that, I do not mean like Gettysburg and all that stuff. A Civil War mindset.
He was a race war. With the white people with the guns and the Negroes and the other people with Noah.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, well, I mean, he's a right winger. They can't engage in a fair fight, Tracy.
Nope. That's like one of my favorite books in the world. One of my favorite books. Negroes with Guns.
And so, I mean, I think I just wanted to make sure that we got that story in there, because this is a dangerous little bit of proto treason.
When do we get to call it what it is, hate speech and treason? When you're calling on people to go to and spilling blood. He's not saying that metaphorically. Did I say that right? Metaphorically. He's not using that as a metaphor. He wants bloodshed. He wants by any means necessary. Because he wants the Negro out of the White House. And I'm like, dude, you got a few more months. You can hang in there.
Well, he tried to run away from it. He tried to say that, any intelligent person know what I meant.
That's the problem. Oh, did I yell? I'm sorry.
Well, no. See, you think he called for a race war or civil war, and that means you're not an intelligent person, because, of course, he wasn't calling for that. By way of explaining himself, Tracy, he waved the bloody flag. He said, "More than 20 years ago, I served on active duty in the military and appreciate that our freedoms come at a heavy price. Today, we have thousands of men and women in uniform fighting for us overseas, and they need our full backing. We cannot be complacent about the determination of radical Islamic extremists to destroy our freedoms."
What about radical Christians?
Well, no. They're just restoring our freedoms, you know, the ones what was took from us by that Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House.
Don't forget about the atheists. Kenyan Muslim atheist usurper. Because you know he's godless. So you and I are intelligent. Because, see, here's the problem. You know, he could say, well, I wasn't, you know, any intelligent person would know that's not what I'm calling for. But here's the problem. Those people that are listening to him are less than intelligent, and they know exactly what he said. You know, he can, you know, we hear the dog whistle, motherfucker. We know what you're saying. And so does every single motherfucker in that audience knows what you're saying. You know, and he's saying, kill people. He's saying, do whatever it needs. You know, if you got it, like you said, that asshole that they took to Burger King after he killed 9 people because he was hungry. That brother.
You just killed 9 people in a church. What are you doing next? I'm going to Burger King.
Well, the Burger King. Well, fucking, you know, because he was hungry.
Bring on those Cheetos chicken fries.
Well, it was like the brother that was, he's a former football player. I guess he's an analysis, and that, you know, he does commentary or whatever. And he was talking about, you know, Kaepernick. And he goes, I love what he was saying. You know, you don't know my religion. You don't know my mama's name. You don't know nothing about me except for that I'm black. And that's enough for you to figure out everything about me. You know, you guys are all up in arms of why, you know, this man sat down. Well, you know, let's talk about veterans, shall we? Let's talk about the black men that went over to, you know, Germany and during World War II and then helped for the freedoms of people in Germany, but came home.
Oh, but that was then. Racism's over. Now quit it.
It's over. You know, but then he went on to talk about what's happening now. He's like, you know, black men die of non-compliance. That's a new disease. He's like, I'm watching the news and there's a white man and then killed these people in Florida and then Nas, you know, eating them as he gets arrested or before he gets arrested. No big deal. He gets taken alive and he talks about, you know, my man over in South Carolina that killed, you know, parishioners. He was taken alive. And to Burger King. Not only was he taken alive, but he was taken to Burger King. But you get a man selling CDs.
Or alleged to be selling loose cigarettes. Yeah, I saw a story earlier today. The guy who choked Eric Garner to death got a big raise. The guy who videoed it is in prison.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, Tracy, Tracy, I got to roll on. Thanks for making the challenge. I'm going to try to get another call or so in here, but thank you very kindly. Thanks for making the challenge. Tracy's got $25. She wants to give the horn, but somebody else got to give $25 first.
Please do. Damn it.
Yeah, thank you, Tracy. Thank you. It sounds better coming from you.
Okay,
much obliged.
You take care, Bob.
And enjoy your pizza. And don't stand up, damn it. Right.
Fuck you.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Goddamn mayonnaise.
Oh, the mayonnaise symphony. I knew you'd enjoy it.
The mayo gate rages on.
We're going to make a fan out of you yet, Tracy.
Yeah, whatever. Good night, Bob.
Later, Tracy. I love you. Our buddy Tracy, the lady cab driver. And now we wander over to South Carolina Stan, where I suspect Todd is on the line. Hey, Todd.
Bob.
Did we have a near gimmick infringement there?
Yeah, it was very close. You know what? Maybe I can do B-B-B.
I don't know. That'll leave Ron talking to the lawyers.
Yeah, we don't want them. Hey, listen, you know you have a truncated show today. You touched on so many interesting things, and last week I heard you read a letter from someone who supports the show and is a good listener, and it really disturbed. I mean, it upset me. You know. And you probably know the letter I'm talking about, right?
I'm reaching for it. I mean, I don't know. You're going to have to help me a little bit. I got a lot of mail.
All right. I hate to say people's... All right, JC, I'll just...
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. The burn baby burn note.
Right. Now, the only reason I bring it up is because, there's another progressive show that I listen to from time to time, and I just happened to listen to it either that night or the next night. And one of the people who is deeply involved in this particular progressive program, I mean, they're deeply involved in advertising, blah, blah, blah. You know, they made a statement, this person made a statement that if they had to choose, they were going to choose Trump. And I was flummoxed, and I never use that word. I was flummoxed. I was dumbfounded, flummoxed. I just couldn't believe it. And it just got me thinking, man. I'm just so worried. You know, where are we as a country? Because why is it the regular, and you know who I'm talking about, and I don't have to say anymore because it's just too intimate. And I'm not.
I got it.
You got it? Right. You got it. And if people can't figure it out, if you listen enough, you'll connect the dots, because I really don't feel comfortable saying any more than that. But you see, why isn't the regular media even, why can't they utter, all right, I'm going to calm down. Why cannot they utter the word fascist when they talk about Trump? And it's so obvious.
Well, because somewhere there's some professor who would then write a clickbait article saying, well, see, it's not really fascist because they don't speak Italian or German or Spanish.
No,
obviously, anyone calling Trump a fascist has no grip on the actualities of history. Yeah, they don't have any snappy uniforms, Trump, and they're not goose-stepping anywhere, so how could they possibly be fascist?
Okay, but even after it's obvious that person, the orange man who, if he could, he would walk through Northern Ireland because he's an orange man, because that's how he acts, like a dickhead. But if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm there.
But see, like you were saying earlier, you know, months ago, it's so obvious that that guy has studied the tapes of Mussolini and Hitler and everything else. I mean, it's just patently obvious. And they're not, I mean, you know, it's like I said the other week, by the way, I did contribute last week.
I saw that. Thank you.
That was what I could do at the time. But it's just so obvious. And then, you know, like I was saying last week, the people he has around him. Because, you know, if you know the American history about the Klan, Indiana is like the Deep South, okay? They were like...
I don't call it Taliban-Diana for nothing, Todd.
You don't. That's just plain old American history. That was infamous for taking those postcard shots. Like, where they would lynch a black guy and cut off his penis or hand or something, take a picture and make a nice, you know, postcard out of it as a souvenir, or actually some people would just take the body part. So, you know, and Pence has to answer for that, because there's a lot of stuff swirling around him. You know, people had to be held to account. This is like you have been saying, the Cold Civil War. And, you know, I absolutely agree with what you've been saying. It's not like they think it's going to be. And these folks are entrenched in this shit. They love it. I mean, I've never seen so many Civil War monuments in my life. And you can't go near them.
Oh, the Lost Cause. It's noble. It's beautiful. It's romantic. I don't know. Maybe if Matthew Brady had been able to shoot in color, Todd, and all those bodies at Antietam and Gettysburg had been nice and bloody for everybody to see, maybe then the South wouldn't have romanticized it. Or maybe they would have anyway.
Have you been to Gettysburg?
Oh, yeah. Couple of times.
I didn't feel that shit. Did you not feel it? I felt.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I've been to Gettysburg. The Wilderness, Chancellorsville, and then in the Western Theater, of course, Shiloh. And Shiloh will give you the chills. Because what you have to understand about Shiloh, man, wouldn't Mr. Stress have loved this conversation? What you have to understand about Shiloh is that after the Battle of Shiloh, that was when the nation and the traitors got their first good glimpse of how awful it was all going to be. Because, you see, more people died at Shiloh than died in the Revolution, the War of 1812, and the Mexican War combined.
Yeah.
And it was an early demonstration of what new weaponry was going to do. There's a place at Shiloh called the Hornet's Nest, where for hours on end, it just sounded like every person there was in a hornet's nest, because that's what the bullets sounded like, and it was constant. The bloody pond, the place where Albert Sidney Johnston bled to death nobly in his boot, the last minute heroic rush up a muddy cliff by the Union forces arriving by riverboat under Grant. And the row on row of stones and the pit where the Confederate dead were unceremoniously dumped. And the monuments to Minnesota and Iowa, to Wisconsin, to places where people had no business ever even knowing where the hell Pittsburgh Landing, Tennessee was.
Right. Right,
and that shit will chill you.
You know, you give me a flashback to the old. I've always loved documentaries, but Ken Burns' flagship Civil War, and I'll never forget this historian. His name might be Foote or Foot.
Shelby Foote.
Yes, and you can see the gleam in his eye. I don't know the man, okay, but.
Oh, no, when Shelby Foote's talking on Ken Burns' documentary, he gets all sexy time looking about his face.
Do you see what I'm
saying? No, absolutely. Yeah, and he glamorizes it, and he tells the story about those moments before Pickett's charge, when the Confederate veteran sees a rabbit running off in the grass, and the grizzled Confederate veteran says, "Run, old hare! If I was old hare, I'd run too." And you can just tell Shelby Foote is just getting off on it.
Isn't he? He has to change his underwear after that scene.
Yeah. I read his three-volume series is fascinating to read. I mean, God damn, it's like a million pages.
I just hope we have to collectively wake up, because these aren't even dog whistles anymore. And you know what?
No, there's nothing dog whistle about Matt Bevin, Todd. He wants him some Civil War. You know, long as he can put it off for a couple of generations so his grandbabies are fighting it. Fucker.
Well, you keep doing a great job.
Well, I thank you, Todd. I thank you.
Okay, and I'll raise you.
And by the way, Jeremy in Vermont agrees with you. He says, "I can't agree more. Gettysburg has a palpable feeling to it, almost a resonance."
Yeah.
In the air.
It kind of scared me. It scared. I remember, like, I've been there, you know, more than three times, but I remember the observation deck and then just the field. I mean, it's only dead spirits you can see.
You ever read much Faulkner?
Oh, yeah. He gets me depressed, but yes.
I mean, it can be a challenge, but there's this one passage where he talks about, For any Southern boy, and by that he means white boy, there exists that moment right before Pickett's charge, because Pickett's charge apparently gets old white Southern men all dewy.
Mm-hmm.
Where all is not lost, where yet there may be redemption. Yeah, floral Mississippian language. I mean, Faulkner was a brilliant writer, no getting around it. And he's probably right in what he describes. I mean, I pulled into the gas station pizza joint the other day, and what's staring right back at me on the front bumper of some rattling, falling apart vehicle? A tag that shows that grizzled old Confederate veteran with the Confederate battle flag over his shoulder, Todd. And I've seen it a million times if I've seen it once, with the remark, "Forget hail." Now, to be fair, I want that guy to have that on his car, because that way I don't have to make any value judgments based on anything but empirical data. He's got that there. It's kind of like my neighbor that flies the trees in rag. I know everything I need to know.
They don't get it, Bob.
And suddenly, Todd, we're back to the deplorables.
But see, and Faulkner, you had to bring. I would like to have a little discussion about Faulkner, because Faulkner to me is so. I have to read things that he's written 3 and 4 and 5, because I feel like he's conflicted. I feel like, I mean, I know where he stands, but I feel like he's conflicted with his own heritage on some level. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I mean, if you are, and I don't think it applies so much to, I mean, you're down there, you know. There's a longstanding Southern saying that there are three kinds of Yankees. Yankees, damn Yankees, and goddamn Yankees. Yankees right. are people who live in the north. Damn Yankees are Yankees who come down south and visit and then go back up north. Goddamn Yankees are people who come south, stay there, don't go away, and start talking about, "Well, why can't I get a good New England boiled dinner down here?
Right.
Why are you eating so much cornbread? Why must everything be fried?" And And they but they hang on to that shit. And if you are native born, multi-generational, been there, yada, 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 then some people get all goddamn misty eyed when they see that old traitor standing up in a statue on the courthouse lawn.
Yeah, that's just fucked up bullshit. I can't even empathize with that. I'm sorry. There's nothing. No. Can't do it. No. But you know what? I mean, we had Civil War memorials in my neighborhood, but you know, it's different here, and it's gotten me interested because you know, there's a lot of history, and it's you know, this is our history. It's very interesting, but these. I don't understand, but at the same time, the lack of education, they don't even fucking get it. If you say treason, they don't get it. It's like, but you.
No, they was fighting for their heritage.
No, that's bullshit. Fuck that. But yeah, your hair, okay, that's your, you know what your heritage is? You just have to have slaves. You have to have someone do the work for you. You have to feel better than.
Well, that economy could never have run on honest labor. And that's a fact, because the only way the planter class could survive was by not having to pay the labor, because small production subsistence farmers could not meet the cotton needs or the tobacco needs or the hemp needs. It was an early manifestation of an economy of scale. It was kind of Walmart-y. Walmart can't survive, arguably, paying a $15 minimum wage.
See, you segued into what I'm fascinated with now. I'm fascinated now with the spies, because remember, the Europeans, the French and the English, they needed the cotton from the South to keep making, you know, the nice clothes. So they sent spies over here, right? Because they were like, fuck this shit. Either way, you people have to work this out because we're losing money. You know?
So, but by the same token, neither side wanted, the English in particular, couldn't quite bring themselves to get involved in the Southern cause, because they understood it was based upon slavery, and they had outlawed slavery decades before.
Exactly. So they were using us, and that's why I tell these motherfuckers, you know what? You don't like this shit? Go to Brazil, where all of your compatriots went. They got a whole encampment of fucking ex-Confederates and Nazis that live in Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil too. Flavio has told us about that. Hey, but hey, Todd, I got to get out of here, brother.
Go ahead, man.
All right, man. Great conversation. Okay. Thanks a bunch. Later.
All right. Bye.
Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. It is. It's time to get out of here because the program is foreshortened. Tracy's got a $25 challenge on the table. If that gets met, then let's see. That'll leave us $145 to go. So that would mean tomorrow night's prayer meeting, Wednesday plate passing, will be at $345. It would be great if we could knock that down. Please remember the $1 at a time challenge that's there, courtesy of Larry. It'll go through the end of the month. Don't wait till the end of the month. Let's provide a little inspiration. There are thousands of listeners to this program. If you've never given so much as a dollar, this is a great time to start, because it'll mean providing an entire week's funding to the Horn in a political year, an election year, when all the oxygen and all the money have been sucked out of the room. So hopefully somebody will meet Tracy's challenge, and then a collection of somebody's will meet the other $145. Thanks, everybody. Join me over on Progressive Voices in about an hour for the Mike Malloy program. Thanks to all volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.